Let's go live, everybody. Ladies and gentlemen, if there's one thing we've learned from the whirlwind of the past few years, it's this, that diversity, equity, and inclusion aren't just buzzwords to be thrown around in the boardrooms and forgotten in action. They are moral and strategic imperatives of our time. DEI is the cornerstone on which we build not just businesses, but communities, cultures, and even civilizations. It's about recognizing that our collective strengths come from the celebration of individual stories, colors, genders, and orientations. They are all important. Please welcome Kim Clark, a DEI, Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion Communications Maverick, whose journey began long before most of us even knew what those three words stood for. Some of us still don't know what they stand for, but we're going to learn all about that today. For over 20 years, she's been shaping the next generation of communicators as a lecturer at San Jose State University. She founded her own no-nonsense DEI communications agency, Kim Clark Communications. The one-year anniversary of her book, The Conscious Communicator, The Fine Art of Not Saying Stupid Shit, is coming up in a few days. Whether you're a DEI skeptic or a full-on advocate, Kim meets you where you are and guides you to where you need to be. She's not just writing about the future. She's actively crafting it, teaching us about true DEI, about, you know, belonging, accessibility, and justice. It's not only an urgent social requirement, but also a proven necessity for an organization's performance. So everybody buckle up, get ready to learn about life, learn about DEI, learn about Kim, and we're going to have an amazing time today. So here we go.
Welcome, I love that intro.
Everybody. Hello, Kim. How are you?
I'm great. I am so excited to have this conversation with you. And I love that bumper. That was, I'm ready. Let's
Were
go.
You dancing to my only chair dance. By the way, everybody, I want to welcome you to A Funny Way of Looking. You can learn all about us over on afunnywayoflooking.com. And you can find us here live every, what are we on? We're Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays. And you can see all of our replays, meet all of our guests, current, past, and some future even, over on afunnywayoflooking.com. Kim, the most, okay, in this case, I'm going to say the second most important question of the day, or tough question, is who do you want to do a shout out to?
You know, being raised as a white woman, I have Muskogee Native heritage on one side of my family, but I've lived a white life. I'm just going to be really, really clear about that. And I've been oblivious, because that's how white supremacy works, for so long, that it was teachers along the way over many, many decades that helped me see what I was not trained to see, right? How I was trained not to see. So my first and foremost shout out goes out to my mentor. I have to thank Rev D is what she goes by, but her name is Deborah L. Johnson. And she's been doing DEI, Michael, since since the times when they would pay, you know, that instead of paying her to come speak about DEI, that she would pay you to come and listen to DEI, you know, talk about DEI. It's like, that's how long she's been doing it.
Gotcha.
And she has stayed the course. I met her in 2004 and changed my career. And has charted my career into this trajectory where I've taken my communications experience and I've incorporated DEI, diversity, equity, and inclusion, into my communication strategies. And now seeing where things have gone from a narrative standpoint around what DEI is and isn't, the disinformation, the misinformation, it couldn't be more critical than communicators stepping up right now to learn about what DEI actually is and isn't, so they can communicate that compelling vision and story that actually ends up benefiting everybody. So there's a long list of teachers. I call them digital mentors. Uh-huh. So these are people I've taken classes from, webinars. I subscribe to their newsletters, like across the board of identities, ones that I am a part of, ones that I am not a part of, and I listen. So I am so grateful to all those who do educate and share their stories, because I'm listening and it informs how I do this work. So thank you.
Thank all of those people. I want to I want to start for our audience that doesn't know what DEI is. I want to start with the, let's start with the pedestrian, and let's move toward the people who are either deniers or just don't understand enough about what DEI is. And I'll ask the questions and you give us the answers and the insights. How about that?
I'll do my best.
Okay. Let's start off with the easy ones.
From my experience. Yeah. So diversity is more fact-based. So okay. If you look at the United States, the founding father, characteristics of the founding fathers of the U.S., white, male, able-bodied, college-educated, land-owning, enslaved people-owning, English-speaking, Christian, those are kind of these default characteristics. And that has become the standard. And the problem with that is that America is an immigrant country. So there's lots of people that have variances from that default of the founding father characteristics. And the farther away you are from those characteristics and identities, the more vulnerable you are to oppression, marginalization, discrimination, and so on. So diversity is naming those identities. And they're fact-based. I identify as a cisgender woman. I have Native American ancestry, as I mentioned. I'm also white, you know, and I am college educated and I am able-bodied. I do not have a disability. So there are identities that the world is built for that makes life easier for me. And then there are things like me being a gay woman where the social construct of heteronormativity makes it much harder for me to navigate this culture and made my coming out experience extremely difficult, almost to the point of suicidal. I actually thought about committing suicide. So that's diversity. And we have to include class in there. We don't talk enough about class in the United States, which is on purpose. But we need, in DEI, we have to be talking about class much more. So then we've got equity. Equity is around policies. It's about structures and practices of inequities, which is barriers to access. And so that could be the pay equity gap. White women make 80 cents to a white man's dollar, for example, but it gets much, much worse if you're a Black woman, if you're Latina, if you're a Native woman, it gets way worse, right? So we're talking about barriers of equal compensation. It's usually in processes, policies, and institutional policies. That's where the inequities are. And so that's why John A. Powell from the Belonging and Othering Institute at the UC Berkeley says, we need to be hard on structures and soft on people when we're working on DEI. And he has this remarkable equity framework called targeted universalism, which I encourage people to look into. Okay. And then you've got inclusion. Now, inclusion is free. Inclusion, everybody can do right here, right now. And it's an action. And so you're looking around. Who's at the table? What kind of conversation are we having? What kind of decisions are we making? Who's informing those decisions? And people will like to identify accessibility separately, which can have its strengths by naming it and calling it out, but it also is an outcome of inclusion. So we need to understand that one of the outcomes that we can identify from inclusion is accessibility. For example, some organizations will name belonging. There's lots of problematic issues with belonging, which I won't have time to get into, but that is also an outcome of inclusion. But my favorite, and the acronym can be DEI, EDI, D&I. You know, there's lots of acronyms around this. Throw in the A as well. Sometimes that's advocacy as well as accessibility. Mm-hmm. My favorite is with justice. Some people add justice and you work the acronym to where it says JEDI. That's fantastic.
I like that. Now, see, that's a perfect background for people who have never been into the JEDI mindset or DEI, since that's what we're talking about today. I want to get into, I think people know, at least on the surface level, about DEI, and probably a lot of people, especially in corporate, have been exposed to it. I want to get into the non-pedestrian questions that often come up in people's minds, but they don't have access to ask someone like you what these things might mean. Okay, we know. I think a lot of people are familiar with meritocracy, where it's like, I did this, I went to school, I've learned, I'm at the top of my game. Talk about, is meritocracy compatible or incompatible with DEI?
DEI is trying to get us to meritocracy. So meritocracy is not currently accessible to everybody because of inequitable policies, access to education, access to experience, not just education, but access to experience. So meritocracy is a myth. And, you know, I encourage people to really dig deep into understanding how can that possibly be. At the basic level is, for me, who as a woman, I know how the world treats and looks and what is expected from a woman. I have to claw. I have to fight. I have to sometimes shout to be heard, not to be talked over, not to have somebody else explain my idea or take credit for my idea. There's these social constructs around that. So I understand that part. But there's also these privileges that I have that, in my experience, I'm working hard. I'm getting that promotion. Whereas somebody else who's having a different experience may be under different evaluation criteria that I am oblivious to, unaware of, which may be skin tone, maybe the sound of their voice. It could be a variety of things that actually have nothing to do with the skill. That ties into unconscious bias and how it shifts and changes how we treat each other, how we talk to each other, but it also has real world, real life impact on if somebody gets a job or not, if somebody gets promoted or not. So DEI is actually trying to get us to meritocracy.
Gotcha. Let's talk about tokenism then. Let's talk about what safeguards are there against, say, DEI becoming a tokenistic exercise where it's like, here's another one of these, you know? Talk about that for a second.
DEI is kind of a double-edged sword when it comes to that, because while communicators, DEI communicators, the people I work with, want to raise and amplify and bring more visibility, authentic storytelling to marginalized people and their experience, hand them the mic, there are people that are a part of these communities who are like, no, don't shine a light on me because that's going to cause even more pressure. People are going to stare at me. They're going to, if I get the promotion, then they're going to say I got it because of this identity rather than I'm really damn good at my job. And that's what I want people to see. So there's a double-edged sword there that we have to navigate and negotiate and take the lead from, you know, for people who have been previously invisible in a lot of our business objectives and our communication narratives, for sure. Now, when I work with communicators, tokenism comes up a lot because we put together campaigns. We put together social posts, you know, the Women's History Month, you know, material. And typically, if you look over the last, you know, several years, where let's just take the example of Women's History Month, we will often highlight white women in Women's History Month. There's a lack of intersectionality that happens. And that's something that we have to raise more awareness to. That is not to say that you run down the hall and find the first black woman you find and say, hey, can you be in this campaign? That's tokenizing in communications. So we have to say, we are telling, you know, what is the story that needs to be told that aligns to our company purpose and our company values? What's the story of what we're doing around Women's History Month? Like, you know, perhaps if we've been around 50 years, the role of women, and then moving forward, women in future as future, you know, drivers and progressing technology or whatever it may be. So we have to tie DEI always to our business. It has to be anchored. It's like, you know, if you're rock climbing, you got to anchor in and, you know, on your business objectives. And that informs your DEI communication strategy, which means that anyone who's a part of your Women's History Month campaign is adding value for who they are, their identity plus their skills plus their identity.
Yes.
So that's a major way that you do not, you know, just like I was mentioning, I'm a gay woman. And sometimes when I've been working within organizations, they're like, we need somebody gay.
Yes.
Or we have an all hands meeting. We need a woman. Who can we get? And it's like, no, you got to flip the script, friends. It's about the content. It's about business objectives. And if you have to go so deep into your organization and far and wide to find someone that is representative of that skill set with the identity, then that should be a red flag of why you need to get into the E part
gotcha.
Of DEI.
Let me ask you a question then, because sometimes I think there's probably like unintended consequences, right? So like, could the DEI, I don't know, could the DEI initiatives like inadvertently, I guess, create divisions or resentment among employees?
That's exactly like, what we're seeing. Yeah.
Is that,
so, and how, what, how I think it came to be is because communicators who were like, especially since the summer of 2020, there was this pressure to say something, put up a black square after the murder of George Floyd. And so many of us had seen DEI out of HR, and it was kind of a philanthropy kind of thing. So you write a check or you make a statement standing in solidarity. But in those 10 words that you put on the black square in the summer of 2020, you had no idea what the work was to live up to those 10 words. That's the impetus of why I wanted to write the book, was because I was trying to like, no, don't put up those words. You don't know what the work is. You don't understand what DEI actually is. It's not just changing your logo in June in the US to rainbow colors to celebrate pride. That was the level of understanding. It's kind of like early math, like addition. Mm-hmm. And so we were at this level of you know, lack of understanding what DEI is at kind of an addition level. And actually, the work is much, much deeper than that, which is why my co-author and I created a framework called DEPTH, the DEPTH model, because we have to go way much deeper and understanding what DEI actually is and then owning our role in it as organizations. So we have been putting out performative communications, which has caused more harm than good, because we have not been able to live up. The research is clear. We have not been able to live up to those solidarity statements, especially from the summer of 2020. So that's causing a lot more harm than good. The trust, you know, is broken for sure. And so if you're looking to go into an organization, you're looking for a job, you want to know that they mean what they say and they say what they mean. But there's still a lot of communicators that have unintentionally caused a re-marginalization where they thought they were saying and doing the right thing because they had kind of an addition level and more, beginner's level understanding of what DEI actually is, because it's been couched in HR, but we never invested in telling what the narrative is and really truly understanding the story and getting everybody involved.
I think that makes a lot of sense. And one of the things that I've heard from, you know, from people I've talked to work in major corporations, is that there is a cost, associated with implementing DEI. Mm-hmm. And so how does a company, especially a small company, justify or rationalize the expense of implementing DEI? Or in your mind, is there an expense, or is it just, you need to do it to reflect society no matter what?
Money seems to be magically available whenever there's discrimination, lawsuits, class action. So legal, HR and legal have a budget. And they just expect to spend this budget every single year, mm-hmm. rather than reinvesting in preventative measures, which is what DEI is, to head off what they have just kind of become adopted to, the inevitable. So so there's not a supply problem, Michael J. There's a distribution problem. And that's where DEI can help companies be more organizationally strategic around where they, so the money's already there. It's just distributed into this kind of, well, we know this is going to happen, or this is what happened last year or the last 5 years. And so we're just going to, so it's a time for bold leadership. to say, I'm going to take a third, a half, whatever it may be, of this funding from HR, from legal, and we are going to put it in comms. We're going to put it over here in these parts of HR. We're going to put it in product. We're going to put it in technology. Whatever it is, we're going to distribute it in a way that allows DEI to be embedded across the organization, because DEI is a filter of making decisions that is similar to financial decisions, IT decisions, HR decisions, comms decisions. DEI is part of the decision-making framework, but people don't understand it in that way. So the money is there. It's just not distributed in the right areas, which is reflective of what we see in society as well. There's lots and lots of funding in all the wrong areas that are allowing people to sleep on the streets in record numbers, for example.
So let me ask you this then. So somebody may come up and say, I hear you about DEI, but I've got a homogenous organization. It's functioning at a super high level. Why do I want to take what's working and change it up just for the sake of DEI?
Is it working though? Is it? Is it really working? I mean, if you have an engagement survey and 80% are of a similar homogenous, you know, identity group, and so your scores are really high, that we feel like we belong, we're really happy here. Well, because the place is built for you, you know. So I'm, you know, like I was saying, I don't have a physical disability. I can run up the steps of the White House or of the post office or whatever. I can run up the steps. And I can say, I made it, I'm here, no problem, no issue. But grab somebody who's a wheelchair user, ask them. So you have to qualify where that content has come from. May I quote somebody who's a DEI practitioner? His name is Arthur Chan, and he just posted on LinkedIn where he says, differing ideas and thinking styles within a homogenous group should not be taken as synonymous with diversity of thought. Equating the two concepts creates complacency about the lack of diverse representation. True diversity of thought comes from diverse identities, experiences, along with an inclusive culture that emphasizes openness, commitment, transparency, accountability, in other words, psychological safety.
Gotcha. Now, someone might say, like, she said, handicapped. Now, everyone's on board with handicapped now because you've got the ramps, you've got self-opening doors, we've got all this stuff. But why do I need to include someone who's Black or gay or trans? Why is that making me more inclusive? I mean, they're only a small fraction of the population. How is that making my organization better?
Well, I'd say that our organizations are suffering without them. Without unleashing talent of anyone is inhibiting organizations from their potential, whether it's through earnings, through social impact, from technological advances. And if we're going to play this role of being competitive at a global level and people want to come to the United States and live here and be a part of this incredible fabric of talent here and technology and funding, then if we don't include folks from all these different backgrounds and a variety of experiences, then that's one of the reasons why we're so behind and will continue to be behind in the US, is because we're not allowing people to be at their best, because they're coming to work and they have to deal with freaking microaggressions and they have to deal with discrimination. They have to deal with comments about how they look or how they dressed or what their hair looks like. And that psychic weight distracts from team goals. Now, I get like, can't we just like not talk about, you know, I don't care if you're gay, like, let's just get to work. It's like, that's what we're trying to get to. Help me create an inclusive workplace so I don't have to hide who I am and I can still work. So it's like, I can be a gay woman and work, just like a straight woman can be a straight woman and work, or a straight man can be a straight man and work. Yeah. That's the goal. So help me get to the point where we don't have to talk about it in this format, we do need to acknowledge different, you know, differences and identities and the varieties and stuff, because there's strengths. That's the framing. That's the narrative that we're really up against, is the differences have become dangerous and we want sameness. That's the difference between melting pot and a salad. So the melting pot analogy has been like, we're all in this together and it has a good spin to it. Again, mm-hmm. This is the narrative. This is why my money's on communicators, Michael J. My money's on communicators to make this pivot, to help people understand what DEI is. Jane Elliott uses the example of a salad. So we've got the tomatoes, the cucumbers, the avocados, the carrots. So we don't want to mix it up. That would be a really horrible tasting and looking salad. Yes?
It would. Yes, it would.
Let the cucumber be the cucumber. Let the avocado be the avocado. The tomato be the tomato. That's where the beauty and the color comes in, and the taste. So we have to, and these are things that we may not know that is driving our unconscious bias or our lack of understanding what DEI is, but it's there. It's been there. And that's what we have to become more consciously aware.
Okay. Let's build on that. I want to go back to the quote that you made, and what we were just talking about is, there's diversity of thought and there's demographic diversity. And is diversity of, let's say, background, is it a true indicator of diversity of thought?
Well, your experience is going to inform how you think and see the world. So okay. My son is autistic. He has his own unique view and experience of the world that is extremely different than mine. Now, if I am rolling around in a meeting with another white woman who was raised as a Christian, there's going to be these commonalities. And you know, if we were raised in white neighborhoods, we may have different experiences, like my parents divorced and hers didn't. That's going to inform how confident I may be. It may, make me more introverted. So there's some communication styles and personality styles that are going to create that diversity of thought. But when you truly have someone from Nigeria walking in, or somebody who was raised in the South, like my co-author is from the South, a Black woman, a heterosexual woman from the South. I am a gay woman from the West Coast. And so our identities, how we've been treated by society, we have being a cisgender woman in common, we have being communicators in common, but there's no way the book would be as impactful as it is without the two of us coming together to create something from vastly different experiences for one common goal. There's no way.
Gotcha. No, you just mentioned the woman in Nigeria. How does DEI, like, work in countries that don't have the same multicultural framework that we have in the U.S.?
It's nuanced depending on the culture. Actually, people think that the U.S. is, like how it is everywhere else. I mean, right. That's a big part of our problem, is we think we're the center of the universe, when actually white folks are a global minority demographically.
Yeah.
People of color are the global majority. But, if I'm in an Ohio neighborhood and I'm going to my local, Baptist church, it seems like this is the normal, this is the typical, this is the standard. This is what life is like everywhere if I haven't traveled. I just came back from Spain, and I can promise you, I was the guest. I was the guest. English speaker. And they are far more forward thinking. Just look at what just happened with the women's soccer team and Rubiales and the head coach. There is a genuine action oriented, not just talk, but action towards gender equality. I walked past and was a part of some demonstrations that were calling that out. So there are older cultures that are addressing what DEI means to them based on their history. Ours is really complicated and extremely unique because of the beginnings and the goings on of this country that we have not acknowledged are harms to Native American and Indigenous people. We have not acknowledged the harms. I mean, look at what's going on with Florida around slavery. You know, that it was a good thing, that they learned skills. Like, are you fucking kidding me? I don't know if I can swear, but
too late.
So there's other countries that have made more efforts to repair, to acknowledge the past and try to own moving forward. Even if I personally didn't go and harm or enslave someone, my ancestors did. And even if my ancestors didn't, remember, I've got Native American on one side and I've got white on the other. So there's a reconciliation there that is constantly going on in my work, right? I'm constantly trying to find reconciliation and healing because I experience that in my family structure. Now, the what DEI looks like in different countries is completely dependent on that country's history. You know, how did it become a country? You know, was there a colonization that's part of it, either as a victim or as a victimizer, you know? But how knowledgeable are you around that history and how much are you going to own it? So in some European countries, for example, it's really religion based. And so in some countries, it's around skin tone, racial constructs that is socially constructed, like in the U.S., some of it's religion, some of it's gender, some of it is class. As I mentioned, class is far more of a DEI issue in other parts of the world than we care to or have yet to care to acknowledge here in the United States. So it exists everywhere. And where I have seen the least amount of work that is needed around DEI is in untouched Indigenous tribes.
We could do a whole show on that.
Be leading the work. They know what they're doing. They know what they're doing. They know way more than we do.
We just might have to do a whole show on that someday. So let's come back to the U.S. for just a second and talk about the companies. And you mentioned just a second ago that the white Caucasian race is actually a minority globally, but we're kind of unique here in the U.S., North America, North and North America. So how do companies here, how do they ensure that the majority groups don't feel marginalized or discriminated against in the pursuit of like diversity? How is that? I know that's a big issue. It's like, how do you do that?
Yeah, as much as people want to say, let's just talk about work at work, the reason that they're saying it is because they're how they were raised, who they believed, you know, and their experiences growing up, it's become personal rather than professional, if you will. So people are really tying their identities because we're openly talking about identities. And when you're a part of an identity like I am, where there's been a social construct that created power dynamics, depending on the amount of melanin that you have in your skin that you cannot control, right? Then you've got this, I'm not used to not being the center of the universe, and I'm uncomfortable with that. Nobody's ever told me like how to handle these feelings. We've never had these conversations before. We've never had a diverse, equitable, and inclusive workplace in a capitalistic society. This is completely new. So these skills, in order for us to do the work to get to those outcomes, is brand new for a lot of people. And any kind of examples that we may have had in personal life, and definitely in professional life, of trying to talk about these things are usually terrible examples, or no examples. So we're kind of winging it. And so that's why you bring people externally into your organization. You need to have that outside in perspective, because this is a personal journey that shows up professionally at the workplace. Okay. So we can't tear them apart. And the narrative of what we need to be talking about, the outcomes, the benefits of the outcomes of DEI has to include everybody. The box that white males are in order to be considered strong, successful, providers, whatever, add your characteristics. They don't, it doesn't work for them either. White supremacy doesn't work for white people either. Mm-hmm. These ideologies, these social constructs are wrong. They're failed. They're not even true, but we've created this experience of it as if it's working. But as we see from the economic gap that we are just seeing today, because we're recording on a day when the big three automakers, their union of workers, thousands and thousands of people have walked off the job. A rise of union power, which created the work weeks that we have and the protections and the safety precautions that we have, and then we're kind of silenced for a while, are now speaking up more because the economic gap, look at the writers and actors on strike. So you've got the CEOs making, you know, thousands of percent more than the people who actually are doing the creation of the work, whether you're an auto worker or you're an actor. And the economic disparity is undeniable. And so this is what DEI could have headed off, is working with those policy structures, the procedures, and that is the E part, the equity part. So as there's more and more of an equity disparity, the more and more there is a need for DEI in order to regain this balance that we actually have never had. So it's brand new. So, wow. And it's created the way things are created right now is that the 1% go off and just protect each other with political systems, organizations, and relationships to politicians. Also, he absolutely needs to be much more transparent. I did a whole webinar about this last week because that's where the shots are being called and that's where the fear is of why CEOs are backing off. And that's why I'm talking a lot more now about, you know, hashtag make leaders brave again, because of this cycle going on here. And it's also set up to where middle class and the poor class are fighting each other and creating more division. And so when the narrative of DEI is focused on differences with a polarizing purpose, mm-hmm. when the purpose of talking about differences is not to unite, but to divide, that's weaponization. And that's what has to stop. And this is paradigm, and paradigm is driven by narrative. That's why my money's on communicators.
Nice. Let me ask you this. So let's say we've convinced any given company that instead of like once a year for this month, we're going to celebrate these people, then these people, and these people. What would be the indicators, the KPIs, the key performance indicators that a company should use and go like, okay, we've kind of reached like a DEI equilibrium. How can they know?
Well, I want to first address what you were talking about, the cultural moments. It's a big part of the work for organizations who are beginning their work on DEI communications is to help them understand what performative communications look like as it relates to cultural moments like these. Okay. So I teach these things called the three C's. So we've got the three C's. So C is all about celebrate, the first one. And so that's about the acknowledgement, the visibility. Yes, thank you for the pride flag. You know, thank you. I appreciate that. Acknowledge that we exist, but you can't stop there, which is where most organizations will stop because it feels good. And they end up centering themselves about how awesome they are around treating gay people, right? Okay, yep. No. You got to go to the second one. The second one is crisis. Why do we have a Pride Month in the first place, Michael J? You know, it's like there's
Black
a reason.
History Month. Keep going. Yeah.
Exactly. Exactly. So we have to. You want to acknowledge? Okay, let's acknowledge. Let's teach. And then what are you doing about it? In not a way that is centering the company, but centering the impacted community. What is the organization's role, which is why we created the depth models to help organizations clarify what their role is in creating a better world and therefore a better company and workplace culture. The third is consistency. So don't just talk about gay people in June.
Right.
The consistency. Right. And also, obviously, you want to talk about intersectionality. Now, KPIs can vary. Now, there's a lot of attention, especially after the Supreme Court talking about affirmative action. and going after hiring goals and quotas, which are illegal. So you have these, you know, there's ways around it that you are still trying to perform equity, because the way the structures and systems are set up is to disproportionately weed out or keep out marginalized populations. Mm-hmm. Maybe we require, you know, this kind of level of education that if we look historically of why there's populations that haven't been able to get to that level of education and experience, then we're automatically cutting them out just by adding that one line of, you know, bachelor's degree, master's degree. So we're already kind of cutting a bunch of people out if we're saying that that is one of the requirements. So there's the hiring part, there's the retention part, there's a lot of HR policies as far as like benefits, health benefits, obviously the money side of things. You want to be looking at that. That's why DEI is often couched within HR, is because we have to go after the structures and the policies. However, that is one part. There's a whole other rest of the business that also desperately needs a DEI lens on how it performs as well. So keeping it out of HR actually is much more advantageous and sets it up for success across the organization rather than just keeping it couched within HR. But you can't do it without HR as well.
Gotcha. You said something a minute ago, and it's one of the things that I don't know that I'm for or against, but I'm going to ask you anyway. In a perfect world, would we have a Black History Month, a Pride Month, a Women's Month, or would those things go away and we have something else?
This is my take on it, is we have those things because we were not educated on those things in our general education as we were growing up. Mm-hmm. So I wasn't aware of these stories. Straight folks aren't told about how Pride started as a riot. So these are cries for visibility and to hear us, see us, have the visibility of our organ of our communities that has been invisible in larger contexts within our media, but also within our educational systems. So we do need them right now, but we need to go beyond the awareness. It's all about action. You know, April is considered Autism Awareness Month, mm-hmm. but they are the population, the community is shifting it to, you know, you've got to be aware of it by now. So we're going to acceptance. Like, you need to understand that autism is just a different way of living life. It's not to be cured. It's not a negative thing. It's just another way of expressing life. But we have, you know, we have a lot to give this world as well. So there is this time of education that is needed, but going to what I was saying before, we have to go deeper. We have to get into the depth of the actions to actually correct the things that we're trying to educate people about.
Okay. Whatever you say next, let's just say that you've got this superpower and whatever comes out of your mouth next is what you want to teach the world. And going to go that way. What is it that you want people to understand and know and believe and follow in this world? What is that?
Love yourself first.
Okay.
So a lot of the polarization, the anger, the hate, although a lot of people who are actually speaking hate wouldn't call it hate. I grew up in a Christian, a very conservative Christian background. So watching Christianity and churches and what they're doing and their role in the polarization is absolutely heartbreaking, but I also understand where they're coming from, and not in a way of approval, to be clear, but the weaponization of their faith that is so contradictory to the point of the faith. They've lost their way. So a lot of that outward experience is because a lack of permission, introspection, safety and support in their own lives and within their own heads to be honest about who they are, giving them a chance for them to explore themselves. Alok is a transgender activist, stand-up comedian, poet, storyteller. I mean, an incredible, incredible human being. And they dress in dresses in all kinds of different forms of very beautiful, colorful fashion, and often plays around artistically with their hair, and has a lot of hair, arms, chest, face, you know, all the things. And they are constantly attacked for, you know, you need to shave or stop wearing women's dresses, you know, and that's just the nice stuff, right? So Alok will post, not trying to defend themselves, because they understand that what the person is saying is not about them. It's about their that person's experience of what they're reflecting on. And will then write these responses basically encouraging the person to self-love. Mm-hmm. And that it saddens them that their existence is triggering a lack of self-acceptance in the person who wrote the comment. So there's a compassion that Alok and many other people who do this work is that we're trying to afford that, but there's also an accountability to it.
Gotcha. I think that's a good message to get out right there. I want to do something. You've dropped a bunch of truth bombs, golden nuggets, and information on us today. I want to learn a little bit more about you. We're going to play a game. We're going to play a game of this or that. I'm going to give you two choices. You can choose one or the other, but not neither or both. If you have to justify yourself on any of them, we can go there for a minute. let's start out easy. Then we'll get a little medium hard questions and maybe hard questions. And let's just see where we go with it, Kim.
This is going to be good.
Okay. Easy. Just and you decide the context of how you want to answer these, okay? Documentaries or feature films?
Documentaries all day. I've made documentaries. Okay. Yeah.
What's your favorite documentary, by the way?
Oh. Well, more recently, what Hulu put out on the 1619 Project.
Okay. Silicon Valley or Hollywood?
Anything that Ava DuVernay puts out.
Uh-huh.
Anything.
All right.
Yeah.
Silicon Valley or Hollywood?
Well, I live near Silicon Valley. I cut my teeth in Silicon Valley. It's what I know. And I also know the underbelly of Silicon Valley. So I'll take it.
Okay. Lecturing or consulting?
If lecturing is teaching, then that's the way I'll go.
Okay. How about Discovery Channel or YouTube?
Discovery Channel.
Yeah, I love Discovery Channel, by the way.
I put documentaries on Discovery Channel, so I'm a little biased. Yeah.
Yeah. Individual coaching or team workshops?
Okay. As a receiver, individual coaching. As a teacher, group.
Okay. About classroom learning or real world application?
Real world application. That's what's accessible to everybody.
Okay. How about writing a DEI guidebook or hosting a DEI podcast?
I like conversation. I'm going to go with the podcast.
Start talking with people, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
As far as public speaking, international conferences or local workshops?
Oh, I just got back from an international conference. It was incredible for me as a presenter to be amongst, you know, these world academics. But if I'm not being a part of the presenter, then I would say a local workshop. But I want representation. There has to be representation.
Okay. DEI in startups or established corporations?
Much harder to dismantle in established. There's much greater hope if it's in a startup.
Okay. How about short-term ROI or long-term cultural change?
Well, actually, you win if you go with the long-term cultural change, then you're going to get short-term wins along the way.
Okay. Nice way to look at that.
Because if you want DEI as an outcome, you have to have it as part of your process.
Nice. How about textbook theories or street smart practices?
Street all day. Yeah. This is all tied to the first question about documentaries, by the way.
Okay. Explain that. Go ahead. I want to hear about that.
Because, I mean, you're talking about, you know, the street smarts or, you know, the out of the classroom. It's like, it's just, it's, and is it a podcast or a guidebook? It's like, it's stories. It's people telling their stories. It's having, this is something that everyone has access to. Yes. Not everyone has access to classrooms, and there's standards and metrics within classrooms that are not, you know, that are not equitable to everybody. Whereas, you know, just somebody coming in and being able to be super street smart about something, I'll take that all day, every day. And so as a documentarian, it's about telling the truth. It's about even the good, bad, and the ugly, and seeing what the story is that needs to be told and just turning on the mic and hitting record.
Okay. Okay. I like that. I love stories. I write. I love to tell stories. So how about DEI as an organizational requirement or as a moral imperative?
Well, slavery was justified as moral. So moral can be a little subjective when it comes to this particular topic. So I think there's a requirement for to be successful in your performance metrics in your job to have inclusion, for example, to make best efforts to diversify your team. So I think there's we already have requirements for our job in order to see what is successful or what makes you capable for that next promotion. And DEI absolutely should be, you know, skills that are baked into our performance metrics.
Okay. I'm going back and forth with this myself right here on the focus on language or focus on behavior.
Language leads to behavior, my friend.
Okay. So start with language and tap the behavior change. Okay. Consulting skeptics or preaching to the choir?
Right now, my focus is on preaching to the choir because they're struggling. They're struggling with the backlash.
Okay. Let's do some thought provoking. How about focused diversity or organic inclusiveness? Forced diversity or organic inclusiveness.
Yeah. If it was organic, we wouldn't be having this conversation. So we have to resist and mitigate the influences of unconscious bias and systemic and institutional racism and all the isms. So it can't be organic, at least not at this time. So I wouldn't call it forced, but I would say it's a requirement of your job.
I think it's sad that it's not organic.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And that's part of the hard truths that we're struggling with. That we think that, and some people within organizations, especially leaders, think it is organic. And it's like, it's not. Look around this room. You're 11 white guys, you know, and you look at entry level jobs, much more racial diversity, neurodiversity, you know, sexual orientation. There's, you know, so the entry level jobs into like 1 to 7 years or so, 6 years, lots of representation. But when you get into mid-level careers, women in general will bounce. Okay. You know, they're just like, they're done with it, especially women of color. They're just like, I'm out. So and there's not succession plans to continue to support them in order to get into those higher levels, VP, C-suite. So it taps out. So basically the system is set up to weed out folks of representation who actually are making up the majority of the entry level jobs.
Right. And well, I'm guessing that's because the control comes from the top in most organizations. So it filters back up to whoever they want to be in control of the.
And then they blame them for leaving rather than looking at their systems, their policies and their culture. And how things are rewarded, recognized, promoted, those kinds of things. Rather than looking at their own system, they blame women because they're going to go have a child or something like that. It's like, you know, and that's the impact of not having that introspection that I was talking about earlier. It's really hard for us to, if we haven't been taught to kind of be in touch and mm-hmm. be honest about what's going on and being able to hear feedback we may not want to hear, but it's the boldness of the leadership is that these are the times, Michael J, when our character is forged. Yeah. So we're making a decision from now until the US presidential election. We're deciding who we are in yep. this context, and we have to choose and we have to stand in who we are, and our character is being forged, and we have to stand up and we have to claim that, right? This yep. is that time. You know, there's a lot of stuff that seems far away in our history books, but we are in history right now. And we as organizations, especially communications and organizations, are shaping that experience.
Kim, you're going to make me go out and get that clap track that I want. And just, I just may have to do that. We'll see. I got a couple more for you. How about amplifying voices or creating new narratives?
Oh, amplifying voices. The stories are already there. They just need to be unleashed okay. and actioned. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Emotional intelligence or analytical skills in DEI?
DEI is all about using all of it to strengthen an overall outcome, all of it.
Gotcha. Last one. I'm wondering if this is kind of super salad here, but cultural assimilation or cultural pluralism?
Oh, assimilation. Oh, God, that I can't stand that word. Okay. Because, I mean, that relates to what we were talking about earlier on belonging, how people will put belonging in there. There's so much data and research that talks about just because somebody, you know, like, oh, here's an example. I was working with the Navy, an affiliate of the Navy. They were putting out something for Hispanic Heritage Month. The first colonel, you know, who's Latino, X, Y, and Z, you know, did a whole thing around it. And I said, well, you need to go deeper than that. You need to talk about the social constructs of creating why it took only 10 years ago for that person to reach that level. Mm-hmm. You know, so don't just praise the guy who probably put up with so much shit to get to where he is. And then he might have had to, had to assimilate, I'll use that word, and give up and code switch and give up so much of himself in order to get to that level. Absolutely. So there's this adaption that happens. So I don't want assimilation, you know, yeah. But we need to name it where it shows up. And we need to, that's part of the E, that's the part of equity.
Gotcha. This has been an absolutely fascinating discussion, just listening to you and being able to understand more. I hope the audience got some golden nuggets out of it. I'm sure they did. People should stay in contact with you. And we're going to throw up some of your websites. We've got communicatelikeyougiveadamn.com. So for everyone who's just listening instead of watching, it is communicatelikeyougiveadamn.com. On LinkedIn, you are DEI Communications, Kim Clark. That's communications with an S, Kim, K-I-M-C-L-A-R-K. And then on YouTube, you are at Kim Clark Communications. And you are definitely over on the Instagram also at Conscious Communicators. Thank you so much for being on. It's been an awesome time.
It's really been an honor to be with you. And thank you for those wonderful questions. I really am appreciative of being a part of your work.
Well, thanks a lot. And we're going to have another deeper conversation on Indigenous people and DEI. They don't even have a word for DEI, I'm sure, for most Indigenous cultures, I'm guessing. So thank you very much.
They don't
Everybody,
need
it. We will see you again in the future. And check us out on a funny way of looking.com. We're all over the place at Instagram, Facebook, TikTok, and YouTube. At A Funny Way of Looking, and definitely subscribe to us so you can get more of this. We're going to have more of Kim over on the website. This interview will be there. We're going to have an article about her, all kinds of fun stuff. So we'll catch everybody in the future. All right.
Follow Thank Michael you. J. Thank you, everybody.
Thank you.